Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the second day, Kaf Beis be'Iyar, Parashas Bamidbar, Tashinayin Vav, the evening of the first day, Sunday, 29 May 2016, webcasting from one of Israel's worst enemies, Israel itself. So the lead headline story in the Jerusalem Post on Friday was, quote, "Dutch deal blow to Israel, declare BDS free speech." And then the subhead, affirmation comes as Israel pushes Europe to outlaw the movement. Jerusalem says, move justifies hatred, close quote. Well, I'm sorry, but the Dutch are absolutely right. The BDS movement is legal. For years after World War II, some people wouldn't buy German or Japanese products. Jews especially boycotted German products, and they had every right to. And so do people today have the right to boycott, that is, even to publicly call for a boycott of Israel, too. Calling for it forces no one to do that. If the Jews had the right, after the war, not to buy German goods because they were angry with Germany, so people who are angry with Israel also have the right to boycott the country and ask others also to do that. From this news item, apparently, Israel is pushing European countries to outlaw BDS because, and Israel is right, BDS wants more than sanctions on Israel for holding on to Judea and Samaria. For sure, like many anti-Israelites these days, they protest the allegedly illegal occupation, but what they really want is the total destruction of Israel, God forbid. The war on Israel's presence in Judea and Samaria is only a cover-up. And worse, Israel aids and abets the BDS crowd by refusing to declare Israel's right to sovereignty in Judea and Samaria, Israel's right to be there. Indeed, it is nothing short of amazing, I think, that Prime Minister Netanyahu and BDS are pretty much on the same page. They both believe the so-called Palestinians have a right to an independent state in Judea and Samaria. The disagreement is over the timing and the conditions during which Israel will withdraw. Last Thursday, the Dutch Foreign Minister Bert Koenders said BDS was free speech. And J-Post's Tova Lazaroff, covering this, noted that it was just 2 days after the state controller here in Israel charged that Israel is losing the battle against BDS because of government disorganization and a lack of resources, close quote. Koenders said, quote, "The Netherlands does not support BDS and does not believe it will help solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict." And I say the control in Israel is dead wrong, and Koenders misperceives the situation. The controller, in his annual laundry list report of what's wrong with Israel, said the government was disorganized and lacks resources, when that implies better organization and more money will change people's thinking, which makes no sense. The BDS is winning because Israel's public diplomacy is wrong. And one piece of evidence is the Dutch foreign minister here looking to, quote, solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict when there is no such conflict. Not now and never was. For a biblical generation of 40 years, now forgotten, between the Paris Peace Conference in 1919 and 1959, when Gamal Abdel Nasser invented the Palestinian entity, the Arabs resisted Zionism, inflamed by Islam. Palestinian nationalism had nothing to do with it. The famous massacre in Hebron in 1929 was ignited by Haj Amin by spreading the lie around the country that the Jews had torched Al-Aqsa Mosque. And in the year 2000, it was Ariel Sharon's walk on the Temple Mount that insulted Al-Aqsa Mosque. That ignited the second satanic intifada. It is always Islam that is the fuel for the flames in their hearts. The invention of the Palestinian national identity was a smokescreen. On Friday, in the painfully liberal Jerusalem Post, they also ran a piece on the opening of the Palestine Museum, mentioned last time, presumably built to match Israel's national museum, which was a lame attempt in the Jerusalem Post to portray the gala opening in a nice light. It cited, with belief and no criticism, the head of the museum, one Omar Al-Katan, who said the rooms and galleries stood empty because, fasten your seatbelts now, logistical and bureaucratic obstacles like, quote, importing nationalist antiques and relics, We've had so many nuts, he said. You got that? The rooms and galleries are bare of any artifacts produced over time by the putatively Paleolithic Palestinians. And they're waiting for the importing of nationalist antiques. What? You are importing nationalist antiques from abroad? From outside of Palestine? When they originate outside of Palestine and display nothing Palestinian about them, then they're not Palestinian, are they? I tell you, this is a society, the Arab society here, that would be at home in Lewis Carroll's Wonderland. And what Israel's public diplomacy should do, instead of pleading about BDS as really being about the destruction of Israel, is destroying the enemy's propaganda, who at its core, the fictitious Palestinian nation with alleged rights to an independent state smack dab in the middle of our Jewish people's ancient historic homeland. I think the League of Nations mandate used that expression, historic homeland of the Jewish people, with nary a nod to any Palestinians. No protest in their name was made at the time either. Every reference to the Arabs here between 1919 and 1959 was to either Arabs or Muslims. Haj Amin in that period said they were all South Syrians, and they all wanted to be part of the new Syria. He did not want a map of Palestine to be created. I have a theory, a religious theory, really, that the Goyim abuse us like this to the extent we deserve to be abused by responding as we do. And we deserve this. In my book, David Ben-Gurion, the socialist on the left, testified before the Peel Commission of 1937, I think it was, saying Eretz Yisrael belongs to the Jewish people and no one has the right among the Jews to cede any of this tiny land. But today, that Israel tolerates this anti-Semitic fantasy and even goes along with it and refuses to demand its rights, well, that only inflames the Goyim who hate us even more. Instead of telling the world, oh yes, we too believe in a state for the alleged ancient Palestinians in Judea and Samaria, Israel has to say, excuse me, but this is the heart of the Jewish people's historic homeland, and we are under no moral obligation to surrender any of it. Surrender the right to visit the tomb of Joseph in Shechem without being shot at, attacked, and do whatever we want, and not according to any other religionist's timetable. The way it is now, I think, if you want to make the pilgrimage to Joseph's tomb, it must be done under army escort, prearranged, and in the dead of night. This is intolerable. These are our shrines. This is our history. World anti-Jewry these days says we have to give back the land we fought and died for, even the land the League of Nations saw as the Jewish homeland called Palestine, and that means giving back Beidel, where, according to one interpretation, Jacob lay on his back to sleep and saw a ladder to heaven with angels ascending and descending on it. It means giving back as well Shiloh, which is not far away, where the Ark of the Covenant rested for four centuries. This is the same Ark Steven Spielberg made a bundle from. He made a movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Spielberg can make a children's adventure story about that Ark, but you won't catch him and other Hollywood liberals of Jewish extraction standing up for the right of the Jews today to live at the site where the Ark reposed for all those centuries. Handing back what we took in self-defense in 1967 means, as well, returning the national family plot in Hebron to the Muslims. The plot where three couples are interred, Abraham and Sarah, their son Isaac and wife Rivka, Rebecca, and their son Jacob, Israel, and wife Leah. This is what the two-state solution is all about in the minds of anti-Jews when they push for the two-state solution. If the BDS crowd jeers at Israel for its presence in Judea and Samaria, race hustlers like Cornel West and Obama too, it may be due to Israel's craven, pathetic refusal to stand up for its rights and instead push against this dishonest scenario, which is what Bibi's Bar-Ilan speech should have done. Every sober person knows that under no circumstances is Bibi going to agree to driving Jews from the hills of Judea and Samaria for the sake of the rest of the people of Israel down below in the coastal plain? They have to stay there, stay here, and Bibi knows it. Yes, the enthusiasts for the two-state solution are, at worst, people out to destroy Israel, and at best, fools and narcissists like those in the Israel Policy Forum. That's another one of those false front groups that really are just one or two men or women. This was featured in a JTA piece by their veteran, Ron Campeas. I was in JPost on Friday. The Israel Policy Forum was never more than a front for a well-heeled, great-neck lawyer by the name of Seymour Reich, who was at one point head of the President's Conference of Major American Jewish Organizations. He was president of one of them at the time. And after his term ended, though, he seemed to miss the limelight. And so he set up the Israel Policy Forum, which was, I think, just basically him writing op-eds, completely devoid of even one original idea. Each was just a carbon copy of what the Matt Ninick might say on any given day. Today, the head man of this outfit is Alan Solo, a former activist in the Boston area, whom JPost reported is about to launch a peace plan for the two-state solution that will include relocating settlers and preparing for Palestinian sovereignty in East Jerusalem. Isn't that special? Solo is a major supporter of the secret Muslim in the White House, and he has brought on board with him some other big-shot, non-observant Jewish activists, from such as the American Jewish Committee. Contrary to AIPAC's correct and traditional policy of supporting whatever the Israeli government wants, because Israel is a democracy and AIPAC's founding fathers accepted that because they don't live in Israel and don't send their sons to fight, they are there to support whatever the democratic people of Israel chooses a government, but not Alan Solo and the Israeli Policy Forum, soulmates of Matt Ninick and company. They are opposed to the government of Israel's views. The nerve of these Jews to pontificate that settlers have to be relocated, which of course is a euphemism for driving Jews from their homes. Exactly as Jews somewhere were driven from their homes in every generation. I doubt an Alan Solo had even a smidgen of empathy for the 10,000 people, Jews, living in those nice family homes in Gush Katif and what they went through, and in some cases are still going through. They had every moral and legal right to live where they did, and it was nothing less than a crime to destroy their homes, communities, synagogues, and lives. It's likewise classical anti-Jew abuse to dictate to Jews where they may and may not live, in what ghetto they had to live, and in what nice area they were forbidden to live. Where is it written that Jews cannot live peacefully, bothering nobody, in Shiloh, or in Hebron, within walking distance of the Cave of the Patriarchs? And I find it simply disgraceful that Israelis, because they have been, leastwise their leaders post-religious, and commonly mockers of religion, that they have never stood up and told the world, this is our ancient Holy Land, and no one has the right to restrict where we may and may not live in it. For this Alan Solo, for whom rubbing shoulders in the White House, as he has with Barack Obama, the anti-Jew, for him to call for driving Jews from their homes in the name of relocating settlers is repulsive. And no less depressing is the Israeli inability to demand respect for Judea and Samaria as ours, precisely because it is a religious demand. In Bibi society, fighting over religion is stupid, because religion is stupid. Old wives' tales, superstitions, myths, and folklore. Nothing to fight over, nothing to die over. I remember when the Arab mob overran the tomb of Joseph in 2000 on the third day of that second, as yet unnamed, intifada, and a grievously wounded Druze soldier was left to die there by Ehud Barak and Benny Gantz because they did not want to kill some Arabs to rescue him. I remember an old lady friend, an old flame of a North Tel Aviviopi, who sniggered at the time. It was stupid to fight over religious shrines like the tomb of Joseph. To demand sovereignty over Judea and Samaria is to be associated in the minds of the Israeli ruling class with religion, and they don't want to fight over that. So they allow themselves to think that if Israel only drives out those damn settlers and gives the ancient ones the state they have a right to, peace will reign finally, and the state of Israel will have succeeded in realizing Israel's dream of the end of anti-Semitism. On the other hand, the good news is that slowly, slowly, Israelis are waking up from that dream and coming to face the truth that hostility to Israel these days is just the same old in a different disguise. The Palestinians and their invention have just been this generation's legitimate way of hating and murdering Jews as a righteous act. Retribution for the evil crimes the Jews commit. It's always like that. One Israeli seems to be rubbing the sleep from his eyes, though, and that is Yair Lapid, head of the Yesh Atid party, former minister of finance, reacting to a meeting of the World Health Organization last week, another UN agency, during which only one country was rebuked for its health practices, and guess which one? And Lapid said, quote, "This is a modern manifestation of anti-Semitism." Last Thursday, he wrote a letter to that effect to WHO's director general, one Dr. Margaret Chan. The day before in Geneva, WHO sat in annual conference and passed a resolution condemning Israel for operating in the area of Palestinian hospitals and violating the health rights of them on the occupied Golan Heights. I was just in Hadassah last week, Hadassah Hospital, and half the people in the halls there, patients and staff alike, are Arabs. Lapid, in his letter, wrote that if the IDF operates near Arab hospitals, that's because they are used by Hamas and Islamic Jihad, and that should be the focus of WHO's condemnation, he said. I remember how the PLO did that in 1982 in Lebanon, in the fighting. They placed anti-aircraft guns on the roofs of hospitals. So if Israel attacked the battery, people in the hospital would also die and make for good anti-Jew propaganda. They did something like that in each of the last Gaza incursions. They did it in 2014. They are barbarians.
Thank you.
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Speaking before about Alan Solo and any other contemptible Jew who refuses to fight for Israel's rights and is paid for that in the coin of love by the anti-Jews, the J-Post story had him in a photograph sitting next to Obama in the White House. And the paper also covered the decision by a British Jewish philanthropist, one Michael Gross, who has long been on the board of directors of Board of Governors, whatever they call them, at Ben-Gurion University in Be'er Sheva, refusing to follow through on a promised $1 million gift because the university is hosting a conference with the participation of the Breaking the Silence group. He called them, quote, self-hating Jews, traitors to the country, close quote, who thrive under, quote, the bogus claim of academic freedom. And in a related story, the Im Tirtzu group has published a list of 20 Israeli academics. I think some are based abroad, but also in the country, being paid a salary by the taxpayers, who support the upcoming BDS vote in the American Anthropological Association, the largest academic association, I think, in the West. If so, this is simply outrageous. And notice how we never hear of the Arab academics, the Palestinian academics, the mavericks among them, who support Israel in this conflict, as surely as these Jewish traitors support Israel's enemies. It was that realization years ago, one night, that drove this former left-of-center liberal over the line when it comes to the Arab war in Israel. It was the recognition that while we Jews, like other peoples in the Judeo-Christian West, are home to the full gamut of political opinions, from far right to the center and over to the far left, with all the variations in between, tolerated in a free society that respects a person's right to think and express what he or she wants, this is not so in Araby. Israel and the West, we do not lack for liberals and leftists who wave the Palestinian flag and accuse their own country of being the problem, versus the Arab side, where there is not one organization, there's no peace now on the other side, there's not one spokesman who stands up to tell his countrymen, we have been unjust to the Jews, the Jews have a right to their homeland, the Palestinian narrative is bogus, and so on and so forth. Speak like that in Arabic, in public, and you're not likely to survive the next 24 hours. That is when I understood that when dealing with the Arabs, that one is dealing with a very different culture. Indeed, as my book argues, Palestinian nationalism is just a smokescreen. Behind it lies the age-old Arab hunger for the wealth of others and the Muslim belief in the rightness of overrunning others and dominating them and forcing them to convert to your religion, and those who do not get to be oppressed and humiliated. This is what the violence that never ends here is all about, and why peace talks have never succeeded, because the Arab-Muslim agenda today is what it was a century ago, the destruction of the Zionist enterprise, which has been to create an independent, self-governing Jewish society, no longer subject to the abuse of Christians, communists, and Muslims.
Must be.
Last item, if I ever had any doubt about the essential Jew hatred that burns in Obama's breast, it turns out that I saw in Jonathan Rosenblum's column on Friday in J Post that Jeffrey Goldberg's lengthy report, went in the New Yorker or Atlantic, on Obama's foreign policy universe, it was reported that Leon Panetta reported that Obama once asked, "Why do we have to maintain Israel's military superiority?" Close quote. And there you have it. This is the mind that produced the Iran deal to allow Iran to build an atomic bomb, to hold it over Israel and maybe even use it, God forbid, to pose Israel from its perch as the only nuclear power in the region, to make the Jews afraid. Or did Obama not know that without this superiority in military matters, Israel would have been overrun and millions of Jews murdered, God forbid? This man is a full-blown soulmate of Louis Farrakhan. Only he has had the wiles and the brains to keep it hidden and do that by lying and lying and lying. And with that, I'll say, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.